Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Well, it's Friday, and gosh, almost in April. I can't believe a quarter of the year has passed. No, it's not a quarter yet.
No.
It'll be a quarter
at
the end of April, but we're approaching a quarter of the year. Time flies, or maybe it doesn't. 914-338-0164 is our call-in number. Press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. Oh, we would love it if you followed us on Facebook and Twitter. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile, and I have to post there as well today. I have not completed posting, so I will be doing that while Neil starts our little chat. What else? Anything else? Oh, donation link. If you are inclined to donate, you may do so by sending to my Venmo, which is in our show description. And if you'd like to reach us after the show, 562-596-7818. Okay, I'm going to start, or finish, I should say, my post. While you get us into a lively conversation.
Yeah. You know, I mean...
What? You haven't even started talking about anything.
Well, you interrupted me.
Oh. No,
I was...
Well, I know... I wasn't interrupting you. You started a sentence with "I mean," as if you were correcting something you already said.
Well,
were you saying
all,
you are mean? That could
when
be true.
When you say those two words, "I mean," you're completing a thought. I mean to say, mean is
right.
Is an explanation.
Which would be predicated on you saying something. Already, which you hadn't. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, you know, it's funny in the English language, mean can be pertaining to a meaning, but mean can also be pertaining to being angry.
Yes.
That's why people who learn the English language have such confusion.
Well, any language, though.
A lot of people will say, I mean, meaning I am a mean person.
I mean person.
Or
yeah.
I mean to say. What we've done with the language is just horrendous. It's corrupted. It's a corrupted form of energy. Now, if we go into the idea of psychic energy, the same kind of theme applies because in many ways there is a corruption of psychic energy in terms of how one gives a reading, how one accurately gives a reading. For instance, when you speak in broad generalizations to somebody and you're helping them, you're trying to help them and you think you're being sincere, but when some of these psychics who I hear say, well, I see a bright light around you, you're surrounded
by angels,
and they go on and on about, you know, the angels love you and you're bright. Well, all of this is grand and sincere in some respects, but is it accurate? Does it really apply to anything? Since psychics have become so phenomenally present, like when I was young, a psychic, you couldn't find anybody around. They were very obscure. Or you might see somebody, Gene Dixon, on the radio, on the TV or something like that. You might see Sylvia Brown. It started to emerge
80s.
Much later.
80s.
Psychics were on corners. They were fortune tellers. They were palm readers. once in a while you'd get like a Sidney O'Moore or somebody who would talk about the stars. But you didn't really, there were psychics around, but they were few and far between. Now the Blog Talk is bombarded with psychics. Can't say we're not one of them, but nonetheless, everyone is a psychic.
And not only that, I mean, there are psychics that aren't on Blog Talk that are, I don't know where the hell they come. I mean, you know, we see them on Facebook and, you know, they're quote world renowned, yeah. You know. And
it's not
like,
to say that some of them aren't talented or valid. They absolutely are. But now the arena is such that everyone's a psychic. And if you're not specific, you just tap into the angels are around you, flowers are around you, you need to be creative, you need to reach out this year. You know, things that really would be laughed at in a real, true circle of psychics. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't really mean anything. It's nice. It's innocent. But come on, psychics need to give out
information. Well,
and if they can't, they can't. And it's nice to talk to somebody who seems to or claim to be intuitive, who gives, you know, nice information, beautiful information, but what does it really mean?
Right. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, on this show, there are obscure connections that are made, and people don't understand why. Oftentimes the subjects are like, why are you asking about this? It happened like, you know, 5 years ago. I mean, why does this pertain to what we're talking about? And then you have to get into a discussion of why. And oftentimes the forthcoming validations or hits will connect, you know, it's like putting a puzzle together, and then you can give an accurate reading. Sometimes they don't connect. Sometimes they say, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, you move on and maybe it'll come to them later. You know, that happens too. But in a good psychic reading, yes, those connections, those validations that are made are put together with other validations so that a complete reading can be given. And not only that, but the question at hand may morph into spirits coming in from the other side. I mean, it gets exciting and varied.
Well, you know, it's the same as if you go to a doctor and you go to a doctor for exam and all he does is tell you is read out of a textbook or read out of his own history what the conditions of a human body are.
And that's common, I got to tell you.
And that happens.
Very
as
often.
As opposed to running tests and really diagnosing and getting into the fine details of what it is. Being a psychic is a great responsibility.
Well,
it's a command of knowledge that extends beyond what you get out of just some exposition of narration that just is claiming all these nice things because it has to do with spiritual energy.
Well,
and then they top it off with the icing, or burn a candle and smell a flower.
Or burn sage. What was I going to say? Oh, but, you know, a good doctor, you mentioned that analogy of a doctor. A good doctor thinks outside the box, and it's very, very rare to get a doctor that thinks outside the box. A good psychic thinks outside the box and is able to make connections that are uncanny, that are uncommon, that other psychics don't make. They get to the heart of the issue at hand and can discover a deeper layer of a person's energy field by their talent.
I don't think there's any crime in it, and it's innocent, and it's, you know, that's why it's called casual entertainment. It doesn't, but when you get into a serious mode where people have a track record of being accurate. And in biblical days, if you were accurate 90% of the time and made one mistake, you were stoned to death. They didn't accept errors in those days. Of course, today it's different. But there are good psychics. And we're not saying that spreading a lot of butter over a reading that has no protein in it. It's just butter it's fine. I mean, it's, you know, that's what people want to hear. And somebody's got a gift of the tongue and they can talk for 10 minutes. That's fine. If that's what you're looking for. However, psychics, a good psychic will get beneath the surface of common knowledge or of common information. A good psychic will probe and dig deep into a person's psyche, into a person's past lives, into a person's environment, and make judgments, maybe with a drizzle of questions, just drizzle, make an assessment that is based on information that isn't readily at hand. And then the next stage is whether they're right or not. Because there are conditions that can confuse a reading in such a way that the outcome is not visibly apparent. It's a psychic has to evaluate sometimes, given what they get on a psychic level, they have to evaluate. A sure sign, a psychic giving a sure sign that this is going to happen would be analogous to somebody walking outside and going, yep, it's raining, as opposed to somebody seeing menacing clouds, gray clouds, and going, well, it looks like rain, but you know, it could clear up. There's a wind coming and that kind of thing. So the idea of saying that a psychic, if you're going to be a good psychic and you're going to step out on a limb and proclaim all these things and make all these criticisms, why can't you always be right?
That would be difficult. Being a psychic while stepping out on a limb.
Yeah.
Balancing on a tree.
Yeah. Well, you
know. Maybe that's a new thing we should do.
You usually crawl out on a limb, but sometimes people tree climb.
Well, when they're tree climbing, yeah, they can step on a limb. Yeah, crawling on a limb probably to protect the limb.
And if you're a really psychotic, you'll step on somebody's limb and walk away. But that's being mean. That's what's called being mean.
Well, no, I mean, for me, it would be, you know, it's in line with my accident-prone nature, stepping on someone's limb, probably my own.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, we're talking, I don't know, sometimes... we're talking essentially about the nature of being a psychic and what it really means and how overpopulated the profession has become, because now everybody is this. I can't believe how many psychics there are, having grown up in a very vacant sea of psychics. Not much there, but with all due respect, we are saying that there are good psychics there, but you know, you got to be careful. You got to be careful about what you're buying into or putting your faith in when it comes to seeking a psychic out, and that includes.
You know,
somewhat testing the psychic. So, seeing, you know, if a psychic is just giving a general broad sweep of information, and it just sounds pleasing to the ear, because its basic substance is hope. You know, you're hoping that they're right, because it, you know, oh, I see a good year for you. You know, this is the year of change. You're going to be creative. You need to go out and grab a tree and hug it. You know, explore that. You know, anyone can say that. That's not really being a psychic. That's just giving general information, wearing a t-shirt that says, I'm a psychic. You're not, there's nothing, you know, people like who call themselves doctors, and they're not really doctors. They're not really doctors, but maybe they got something online or something. They're not really, really doctors.
Are we talking about doctorates online?
Talking about people who make claims to be something that they're not really qualified to. You can be creative and call yourself anything.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a a big surge of people getting doctorates because of the way education has been structured online, especially after COVID. And so, I mean, it was already moving in that direction anyway, because people work and, you know, have to go to school at night, and doing it at home is easier than going into a classroom. But a lot of people are getting doctorates. They're getting doctorates, and the coursework is not, I mean, you know, it's just not, like if you went to USC or Berkeley, these are schools in California, obviously, the standards for getting a PhD or an EdD would be much more stringent than the standards that like, you know, online school, that an online school would have. And then these people go through these programs and essentially you write what's like a term paper. It's not really a thesis. With not a lot of original thought. And then the people call themselves a doctor. You know, they do it because they want the title of doctor and it's an ego boost. But, you know, what's interesting is pharmacists are doctors, lawyers are doctors. You know, they have to get Juris Doctorate. Pharmacists have to get doctorates. And they don't call themselves doctors. So that's just my little side note comment on, you know, expertise or calling yourself a doctor when really, I mean, in an academic setting, if you're getting a doctorate online, that's where you use the title. Etiquette-wise, it shouldn't be used in social circles. So,
yeah, I mean, what we're really talking about is one qualification. It's hard to, I mean, people can go to psychic schools or pass certain things and they get some kind of certificate or merit. But and that's fine. People can learn how to be a psychic by practicing the skills of what it means to be a psychic. You can practice it. You can take a test. You can do all kinds of things that help to qualify being a psychic. But the main thing about being a psychic is knowledge is important. And the broad range of your vocabulary and references and knowledge regarding chakras and astral fields, even if you're into astrology or the medium points or whatever it may be that you're discussing, if you're getting into the depth of different kinds of philosophies or religion, all of this helps a psychic. The more knowledge you have in any given field, in a various form of seeking allusions to different forms of knowledge, is always going to be gratifying and helpful and educational. So that goes across the whole board. But the thing about a psychic is the psychic has to tap into being intuitive. So that's the first plan of action. Then the psychic has to be specific, because people, if you're really seeking a psychic, you want specifics. Being intuitive can involve saying broad statements. Oh, you know, you're a beautiful person. You're very creative. This is going to be a good year for you. All of those things are broadly intuitive. When you get into the specifics and you really analyze deeply the nature of psychic phenomena, and that just doesn't include, your mother's here talking to you from the other side. She sent you roses. I mean, there's got to be more, or it should be more than just generalizations. And then, of course, if you're looking at a person's future, if you're imposed to share with somebody something about their life that may pertain to the present or the future, then that's a great responsibility. And it can't basically be based on a hunch unless you don't claim to be a psychic. If you claim to be a psychic, then you have a general responsibility, morally, ethically, professionally, to kind of give some basis for your results, for your findings. You just can't assume. You have to have some kind of proof. So psychics need to have hardcore evidence.
Right. Well, I'm going to talk, I want to interject because first of all, we talk about basis of psychic, being a psychic, coming from intuition. So that's third chakra. And there are many times, I mean, as a psychic, you have to agree, you use your intuitive skills. And so there's, you know, if a person asks a question, there's going to be a vibe that you get immediately, yes or no. And it will be, you know, you'll get that vibe. Am I, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But then we get into the idea of, you know, validations. Well, you know, people, skeptics criticizing certain validations. You know a Mike. Well, Mike's a common name. Who doesn't know a Mike? I mean, it's tricky because sometimes those names come in. I mean, the names do come in, not sometimes the names come in, but the names do come in with a strong vibration, which is why we mention them to the person, or there may be an event mentioned, or, you know, whatever. And a skeptic would say, well, I mean, can't someone, you know, anyone can say they went on a trip to an island or knew a Mike. But those hits come in with a vibrational energy. And when constructed in the context of the reading, they tell a story. You know, you put the pieces together and there's a story there. So people might say the validations that you get are bullshit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are certain variables.
I mean, obviously, there are uncommon names that come in. I mean, we've had that happen on the show many times. So, and it's outstandingly psychic, obviously. But you know, a lot of other times, it's not as impactful in terms of how impressive it is. But were you going to say we have a caller too? I'm sorry.
Well,
interrupted you. I did interrupt you that time.
Well, all I'm saying is that there are sometimes extraordinary variables in terms of the vibrational field of karma or the intensity of how a person can sabotage themselves or somebody moving into to disconnect the person from their life flow. I mean, those are other things that a good psychic has to look at and be aware of. So a psychic might say, hey, look out for a Joe. This person is going to sabotage you. And then suddenly a Joe comes in and true in the color, the person is out for no good. So you have to kind of look at the variables that can disrupt what would otherwise seem to be destiny bound. Some destiny bound elements of life can be disrupted by karma. But we got a caller.
We do. Hi, 661.
Hi, my name is Carol, and I was told that I'm to tell you that Jen and I went to school together in London, so she wanted to tell you that. So I don't know if you know Jen or not, but yeah.
Yes, and so, of course.
And that you guys love animals, so I'm trying to study to be animal communicator. So,
I do.
We do.
So this is good. We're all in. It's symbiotic here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So she told me to call in and to give you my name and my date of birth for numerology reading, or is that right?
Sure. Yeah. Are you the Midway, some tree? Do you live in I don't know, the city that you live in. I remember getting a name and then it was the city. What city do you live in?
Palmdale, California.
Oh, you're in Palmdale. So this is a different person. Okay.
Yeah.
This is a different person. You went to psychic school with her recently?
Yeah. We went to London. We went to Arthur Findlay. And we took animal communication.
Person. Okay.
Yeah. And then
it was someone of your Vegas show. Okay.
Oh, you're thinking of Lori Ann. Yeah. Lori Ann's her other friend. Yeah. We all went together. So it was great.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't know there were three. All right.
Yeah.
So what's your birthday, Carol?
July 6, 1960.
7-6-1960.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're 2911 too.
Is that okay?
Well, I mean, there's all numbers have duality. So, you know, just real quick.
Yeah.
Let's talk about 1989. There may have been a change year compounded. So it's a little bit harder to find a change with a compounded person at their karmic change. But you would have been 29 years old in 1989.
That's right. And I got married.
You got married.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You got married.
Subsequently divorced.
Divorced. I was going to say that I didn't think the marriage lasted. And so a lot of times, yeah. So when compound, I mean, there are people that aren't compounded that get divorced, but compounded people more often, more typically get divorced. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, so you're married and divorced, and are you single now?
No, I got remarried.
You did get remarried.
Mm-hmm.
And there are children?
I never had children, but my husband now has one child in them.
So
in
there is a child, but it's your husband's child. Is the child
grown?
He's 40, no, probably.
41. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 41, but there is a child.
Yeah.
Okay. That he had. What's his birth date? Not the child, your husband.
10/27/51.
27/19/51. Oh, interesting. 7/8/9/19/25. So he's a 25/7.
No, he's a 20.
Wait, 7/8/9/10. 26. You're right. 26/8. Okay.
But she's asking about her.
Yeah. What's your question?
About the animal.
I'm just trying to see. 7/8. You don't have to ask a question. I mean, if you have a specific question, you can ask.
I mean, I'm hoping that I'll be a successful animal communicator. I guess maybe that would be my question. I hope that I'm able to connect, you know, well and be able to do that kind of work.
Well, I mean, the first basis is, Carol, if the desire that you have to become an animal communicator gives you a good head start in becoming an animal communicator, because obviously you have a love for animals and are attuned to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good starting base. Do you have pets of your own?
I do.
Okay. Different varieties? Or are we talking one variety?
One variety.
Okay.
Dog, Italian Greyhound.
Oh, okay. Oh, I love those dogs. Okay.
Shoot.
And so currently, have you started a business plan? Are you doing readings? What's going on?
I'm doing readings just with friends right now. And then, for example, tonight I'm going to be doing two classes from the UK. So I have to get up at 3 a.m. for the entire weekend.
Yeah.
Because it's a continuation of the Arthur Findlay class that we did in London. So I will be doing that. And hopefully that'll give me a little bit more of a push in doing it. It's just fear, really. It's just that I'm afraid I'm going to get it wrong. That, you know, it's just fear. So.
Understandable. I can relate because, you know, Neil and I have been doing this show for, gosh, how long, Neil? Almost 11 years?
Yeah.
And I did not start out doing readings on the show. I mean, Neil and I met in 2011, and I was a client, and then anyway. But so, you know, you can read about our story a little bit in our bio, but I did not start out doing readings. And when I did, I was really afraid of being wrong, afraid of being wrong. But you're not going to be a good psychic if you don't take risks.
True.
That's 100%. One thing. And, you know, sometimes you're going to be wrong, but no psychic is right 100% of the time. It's just trying to get that accuracy rate up to a good percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right. You know, first of all, Carol, your numbers suggest you're already past the starting line to be an intuitive for animals and to communicate with them. You're already in the starting line because of your particular vibration and your particular number is 7660. Now, you've got two sixes, which is the third eye. One is the third eye from past life, and one is borrowed towards the third eye in this lifetime.
Okay.
So those two energies means that you're able to pick up energy from a past life via now animals. Animals don't have souls, they have spirits. But what you can gather from reading an animal is their history. So when you're reading an animal's history and you're being intuitive, what you're doing as a human being, which you will probably be successful at, is you'll be able to pick up their abuse, what they've gone through. You'll see images of whether they've been abandoned or whether they came from a good home. You'll see images of what's bothering them in the family, like if there's a baby in the family and they're jealous. Or, if they, you know, so you'll be able to have that ability. Now, your number starts off with a seven, which means that you've got a spiritual position of karma in your energy. Seven and six becomes a 13, which is a four, which means that you have come into the planet to balance your past life karma. In that terms of balance, you've also have to be conflicted by what you have to carry through in this lifetime from past lives via the divorce and, you know, relationship problems, whatever problems you've gone through. But lo and behold, your 196 actually becomes a six solid, but the 19 becomes a 10 or a one, which would borrow that six and one to become a seven. So your seven and six is now repeated again. So what's going to happen is you will start to emotionally become involved with animals through your heart.
Okay.
So your heart will, your heart chakra will pick up the animal vibration. That will gradually climb to your third eye. So the feeling you have about an animal on an intuitive level will emerge upward to your third eye and become a language. Which you can articulate.
Wonderful.
And, you know, at this point in time, you'll be very, 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 I predict you'll be very successful at it. And you'll change not only a lot of animals' lives, but a lot of people's lives. So it's sort of like, you know, the dog whisperer is an acute human being that can feel the animal out, but they're not psychic. No. They can determine what an animal may have gone through, but he doesn't claim, Cesar Chavez doesn't claim to be psychic. He's more of a dog whisperer, which means that he, now what you're going to do is go in his energy, but probably go beyond. That doesn't mean that you necessarily have to train a dog, but you may give insights to people in terms of what the dog is thinking. So you become the dog's interpreter.
Yeah. He's more of a behaviorist. So,
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
But people will be coming to you if you're practicing. I mean, in doing readings, people are going to be coming to you because of their dogs or cats or birds' behavioral problems. That's a lot
you know what?
Go ahead.
The interesting thing is, like, I know this is going to sound morbid, but I really want to focus on past dogs, dogs in the spirit world, because so many of us, especially here in the U.S., I don't really know where I'm calling, but
You're calling California. We're in California.
Okay. Well, there you go. But, you know, so many people, when they lose a pet, like the grief process is so acute and it's so intense. And that's really where I want to put my focus and my attention. And that's where my passion lies, right there.
So you want to do strictly, you want to limit your practice to
dead dogs.
Doing, connecting to dead dogs, and that's it.
Pretty much right now. That's
okay.
Well, but that doesn't.
I mean, it
that
changes.
Doesn't conflict with anything. We're
no,
saying.
There's no conflict. It's conflict,
your,
but it changes
third
her
eye,
direction.
Your third eye will. That's part of your energy because your third eye is available from the astral realm, past lives.
Okay. Uh huh. Okay.
What you're really saying, in essence, Carol, is that in between lifetimes, my soul was on the astral realm and I involved myself with animal spirits on that realm. So now that I've come back to the planet, I'm coded like a bee back to the hive. I'm coded with the travel energy of having conversed to the hive, to the plant, the flower. So your ability to talk to animals from the other side, their spirits, not their souls.
Yeah. Right.
will be pertinent to the energy you did when you were in the astral realm between lifetimes. And the way that you coded your energy in coming back to deliver information from animals that have crossed over.
So let's clarify about the soul, spirit, animal topic here. I don't know what they teach at your school, but the reason we don't say animals have souls is because they don't have karma like human beings. They're not judged. So when animals die, they go into the spirit world. So there's no soul because the animal doesn't hold karma. You know, the animal doesn't come back because, you know, he got into a fight with a sibling and, you know, they have a bad relationship.
That,
you know, it's a totally different process for an animal. Mm-hmm. So, so, you know, you're connecting with the spirit of the animal, not the soul.
Well, I really appreciate you guys. Thank you. I've never called in before, but perhaps I will another time. And
okay, if you have any other questions, I mean, you can ask.
Did we answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. My friend Jen just said, call them right now. They're doing numerology for 45 minutes. I'm like, okay. You know.
How does your viewpoint in your own world, how does it differ or is it similar to what we see?
It is similar. It is because animals are in spirit. They aren't. It's very much aligned with what you're talking about. And then it just gets down to semantics in terms of whether it's the soul or the spirit. And I mean, that could be, you know, the egg and the chicken conversation again. But I do see it as a spirit, that animal has a spirit. So
explain that better than I did.
The thing about the spirit and the soul is that animals don't really collect karma. Animals, they don't have karma. The creator didn't breathe a soul into an animal. Animals have a special energy of just pure spirit. So they're not reduced to a karmic element. And so that's what makes them so special and unique.
Yeah.
Your essence of spirituality is in your seven. It's combined with your six. So you have the advantage of being both spiritual and karmically soul oriented. So, semantics. Yeah, you could call it a soul if you want to. It doesn't matter.
But
your question is, you approached this with a sense of apprehension and doubt, because you're said to us, will I be successful?
Yeah.
Now you've got to really look at that, Carol, and you've got to say, why did I approach, if I'm going to be speaking to animals on their side, why did I approach the question with apprehension, the premise? That you may have your own reasons, I get that. But what you got to do in your life, and listen closely, is you've got to eliminate that doubt. Don't doubt yourself. It's coming from some area of your upbringing that's kind of ridiculous.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. You know, just never good enough, you know, all that stuff that we carry on from, you guys get it, but
throw that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just move past it. It's, I mean, easier said than done, but if you can just get past it, not dwell on it, and not let it interfere with your forward movement in life. I don't know if you really care to hear, I mean, about your husband and you. I mean, you two have a very, very strong karmic connection.
That is so weird because Jen just texted me and said, ask them about your relationship. And I said, no.
Oh, good. That's
no,
so funny.
I don't want to put that out there on the radio. I don't know.
Well, you know, we won't talk too much about your relationship, except in the numbers system. So, I you're born in July. He's born in October. So that's 7 to his 1. Your 7 to his 1 becomes 8, his master number. Moving into the days, he's born on the 27th, you're born on the 6th. So if we put an X between the 27 and the 6th, the 6 and 2 become 8 again. His master number 7 is your month, so we can place that there. The 6 and 5 in your years is an 11, which is part of your karmic. Your karmic number is 29. Then you have to reduce again to get 11, reduce single digit
again,
because master
yeah.
numbers are a single digit. Your master
yeah.
number is two, but that 11 becomes a two. So the six and five are, you know, your karmic, part of your karmic code. Then the one to your 0 to is one, or one to zero, I should say, his one to your zero become his month. So the birth dates are like super connected. Super connected.
Yeah.
We don't have to get
yeah.
into the specifics of your relationship, the private, you know, we don't want to, you know, invade privacy in any way. But
we're good.
yeah.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, yeah, good.
But
good.
Thank you so much. But really, thank you guys so much. This is a really interesting show you do. And yeah, I appreciate your feedback and all that stuff. And I will push through. I will persevere. And yeah, I'm excited.
Great. Good.
All right.
Nice to talk to you.
You as well. You take care.
Okay, you too. Bye. Okay. Thanks, Jennifer, for referring Carol to our show. And Carol can join us on Facebook. We'd love it if she would. She can see pictures of our cat on Facebook. There are several exciting pictures. Actually, we have a slideshow, too, on our Blog Talk Radio page. So if you're watching the show or listening to the show, you can see the slideshow and several pictures of her in various poses,
yeah.
Doing,
you know,
card tricks and computer work. She's a special cat.
That's right. You know, mentioning Cesar,
Cesar Chavez.
Chavez.
Is that his name? No.
Cesar Chavez.
No, that's the grape guy.
Cesar
Milan.
Cesar Milan.
like, going, wait,
yeah.
this is not.
Well, Cesar Chavez.
I'm not the guy who fought for the rights of migrant workers.
Cesar, yeah. this is what it means to be a good psychic. You deliberately make mistakes because you have allusions to history. So Cesar Milan.
Cesar Milan.
You see, what he does, he calls himself the dog whisperer, but what he does, he really works under the command of tribal leader Muscle. He imposes upon the dog that he is the alpha dog. Now, he may approach the dog, reluctantly, if the dog is a crazy dog, but he stands his ground because he lets the dog know that ultimately he is the leader. So what he does is becomes the alpha dog, and once he becomes the alpha dog, he forces the dog to model his command, model his behavior. So what he does is he uses positive, negative reinforcement and a command of the environment at large. Carol, I don't know if she's still listening. But
she may be on the bed. She's talking about.
Carol is talking about communicating. So, yeah, Cesar is more of a animal behaviorist, if you want to call it that. He's more of an animal trainer than an animal behaviorist. An animal behaviorist is going to, that's a whole different log of research and experiments. And Cesar Milan doesn't really, he's not really an animal. He deals with animal behavior, but he's not a classical animal behaviorist. You have to go and get a degree for that, and then you have to run tests and you do all kinds of things.
Well, this is much more, yeah. I mean, what Carol's doing is much more esoteric, and it's, harder to, I mean, it's not based in, it, you know, there's no scientific method that it can be applied to what she's doing. She's trying to talk to dogs in spirit. Being a dog behaviorist has basis in, you know, it's scientific. It's grounded in the physical realm.
Yeah.
What she's doing is not grounded in the physical realm at all.
Well, there's, you know, a couple of things that you have to take into account. Number one, she's dealing with animals that have brains, that have feelings, that have experience. You know, there are people who will communicate to others about plants, and they're plant communicators. And, you know, anything that has a molecular structure can have a form of communication within its environment. The soil itself can be communicated with. She's dealing with animals that have brains. Now, what happens is that when those animals cross over, of course, their brains aren't there. the energy is incorporated not into their soul like a human being, where there's going to be a command of judgment and evaluation. So the question is, what if an animal crosses over and is pure spirit, why does an animal have to carry with it the experience
of the earth?
Of the earth, if the soul is no longer there, if you want to apply that term to it.
Well, the soul is no longer there. Well,
the soul of the animal. I mean, we could pictorially say that the animal has a soul, or we could argue the case that the animal has a soul. But if we registered the idea that an animal doesn't have a soul, an animal has a spirit, and there's no need for a soul, there's no need for a memory. I mean, that may sound cold and callous, but then the idea is, what is in the animal spirit that needs to be attached to the planet Earth,
right,
and the people there?
So, I mean, saying that an animal has a soul, when you consider the fact that the animal had experiences, had a brain, and all of the animal's life experiences are stored within that brain, and it has to be accessed in a reading, then you could loosely call that a soul that you're connecting to. I mean, it just gets tricky.
Yeah, it's not
a soul that's subject to karma or an evaluation at all, but it's a repository.
We could assume that in that regard, an animal has a soul. Maybe not literally, but figuratively speaking, an animal has a soul. And within that soul is a retention of memory and some degree. I, for one, believe in it too. I mean, I talk to my dogs on the other side and stuff like that. So I'm not saying that I don't do it. I think there is a strong connection to the energy. I'm even inclined to say that when dogs or cats cross over, their spirit lingers around the person.
They're not exactly in the astral realm,
but they're actually lingering around the person. They no longer have a body, so they're not in need of food. What they do is they connect to their owner, if that be the case, by vibration.
I was going to mention that to Carol, but we just didn't get to it. That the animal typically will linger around, especially if the relationship was a close one.
Well, sure. So the idea that an animal can be within the immediate parallel dimension or universe, aside from a physical reality, the reality is, I think, a strong notion.
It
as
is.
Well.
And I don't know what else we were going to say. Was there anything I was going to say responding to what you were going, what we were talking about earlier?
I don't know. I'm not psychic. How do I know?
I don't know. I'm just, we're kind of like, you know, at the end of the show here, so we can wrap up if we want to.
We can wrap up.
Yeah,
but the idea
is
that, it's a broad world out there. And
it's a world full of broads.
Broad world.
Of which I am one
and
of.
And you can take your pick.
Okay. We'll be back next week, Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Bye-bye. I'm going to get these songs.